This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Digging in the Crates. I'm your host, Phil Schneider. This is going to be a sort of a special episode, a little different the way we've done it before. I've got my buddy Matt D. from fellow Segunda Caidist. This is your second ever podcast, right, Matt?
Yeah, more or less. I've done little things here and there, but for anything major, this is number two.
All right. So this has got you early in the whole process before you become a jaded podcast veteran.
Yeah.
Still excited about it. No longer doesn't feel like an obligation.
Before my wife kills me.
Before your wife kills me. Yeah. Luckily, my wife's pregnant, so she's asleep. went to sleep at 9:30. That's why I can do this at 10:30. What I did is I made Matt, who was somebody before I made you watch a lot of Lucha, hadn't really watched anything but American wrestling. Is that right?
Yeah. And I've been part of the community forever, but I was just been a lazy part of the community with, you know, ADHD that kind of can only deal with English language.
Right. And then, of course, you went in for the last, what has it been, 2 years?
Yeah, 2 years.
2 years, you've written a ton of really interesting, really cool Lucha reviews for Segunda Caída, yeah, which I'm assuming the people who are listening to this are familiar with. But if not, you can go to segundacaida.blogspot.com and search your name or something and find a cornucopia of Lucha reviews. But you still really hadn't watched very much Japanese wrestling or any.
Yeah, I've watched a little bit here and there. I'd get something on like Real Media back in 98 or something like that. But in general, nothing regular, you know, not really.
So what I did with this podcast is I figured my favorite Japanese wrestler of all time is Yoshiaki Fujiwara. And I got the sense from the things that you like about wrestling that he would be one of your favorites too. So I figured that I'd pick sort of a cross-section of Fujiwara matches, make you watch them, and then we talk about them. So you may have hated all four of these. So this might be an interesting podcast with me talking about how much I love them and you kind of just going, nah, not for me. So it could be a little weird. This is one where I'm coming in a little blind. I didn't ask you what you thought of these matches before we talked today. So hopefully it'll be interesting to see what you thought. Had you seen any Fujiwara before?
I had. I'd seen maybe 2-3 matches as we started the Greatest Wrestler Ever project. Okay. I early on I thought that I'd give Japan enough of a try that I'd hit it all, but then I realized that I had no time for that. Yeah. So I watched a couple of things. I liked what I watched. I know coming in, not a lot, but I know that I like his, I really like, and actually this didn't come up in any of the matches, because I've seen, I guess, more older, like old man Fujiwara more, into last, I guess the 2000s, where I love when he, you know, someone tries to get him in a hold and everyone in the crowd laughs because they realize that it's going to get turned on them.
Like, this would be the period where he developed that as a trait. This is why everybody thinks that, right? Mm-hmm. These are your 80s matches and then a match from the 90s sort of that we looked at here.
And coming into this, I could give the BS talking point of him being such a great defensive wrestler, even though, you know, I couldn't actually back that up, but I could sound good.
So. Yes. So that's my sort of history with him. As a fan of his, he's not a guy who was part of my early Japanese wrestling fandom. Like during, you know, I started watching Japanese wrestling regularly when I got All Japan, New Japan videotapes, television videotapes from a video store near my house I think the video store was in Oakland. And I discovered this place. You could rent them, so I'd rent them, and then I got two VCRs, and I'd copy them. And this was around 90, and this is when I was home for college, so this would have been like 94, 95. So this would have been like current, you know, when Kawada versus Misawa happened, I got the TV and watched it. And that's how I got started getting into Japanese wrestling, although I'd always really liked when Japanese dudes would show up in WCW. when I was watching that. And then I got, you know, into the internet and tape trading and, you know, now 20-odd years later, 25 years later, I guess, I'm involved in this nonsense still. But that's how I kind of got into it. But when I first started watching Japanese wrestling, I think the earliest Fujiwara match I ever saw was a match against Kawada, who was one of my favorites from All Japan, which is still maybe the worst Fujiwara match I've ever seen. And it was a match where something weird was going on politically, and Fujiwara just was not refused to sell anything for Kawada. And, like, Kawada would kick him, and Fujiwara would just kind of stare at him and not sell. And it was like, and I remember why, first time I watched the match, who the fuck is this fossil to just, you know, dismiss everything Kawada's doing? This old dude sucks. And that was my Fujiwara opinion for a long time. And then when we put together the, started putting together the Other Japan 8 DVD VR 80 set, which was the second one that we did, I started watching all the UWF and UWF stuff from him and thinking, oh man, I was completely wrong. This guy is awesome. And then I became like semi, you know, obsessed and just started trying to watch everything. So that's kind of how I got there. He was a guy, like I said, my first impression was very negative. And it was funny. I rewatched that match years later after watching El Switch War and figuring that I would just, you know, if I watched it again, I would think it was awesome. I just, you know, was needed to, you know, understand everything. But no, it still sucks. So it's like one of those things where I just assumed that the second time I watched, I would think it was great. But no, it was not. So that's sort of my history with them. And let's, speaking of the 80s Other Japan set, the first match finished ninth on that set in the voting. And that was Yoshiaki Fujiwara versus Super Tiger. Mm-hmm. Near the end of the first iteration of the UWF, September 11th, 1985. A date that will live in infamy as being one of the last matches in the UWF.
I actually hadn't realized that UWF was that early.
Yeah, so there was basically two versions of the UWF. There was one that started in 84, where all these guys left New Japan and formed their own thing. Takata, Maeda, Fujiwara, Super Tiger. That lasted for a while to around 86. They all went back to New Japan, had a big feud there, and then they left, except for Super Tiger, who disappeared basically for a bunch of years. And then they went back, they broke off again and had a second UWF that was around in the late 80s and early 90s. And that was the one that then became a bunch of other stuff. So, like, that UWF broke up and Maeda sort of started Rings and Takata sort of started UWFI and Fujiwara started pro wrestling Fujiwara Gumi. And it kind of fractured into a bunch of other things. And then the style died once people started watching mixed martial arts. Now, basically, that shoot style stuff doesn't really exist anymore. It shows up every once in a while in a weird side thing, tribute show or something, but it, as a style, it's pretty much dead, which is too bad because it's great. But now people know it. But when, you know, the whole part of the appeal of it was that this was real fighting and as opposed to fake wrestling. But when people actually started seeing a lot of real fighting, they're like, oh, it doesn't look like this.
It's funny because what appealed to me the most about the match was actually really traditional wrestling stuff. Stuff.
I don't know how much of it's really intricate mixed martial arts at all.
Yeah,
it's instead stuff mattering a ton.
Yeah, like, it's funny that anyone could see this and kind of think that it's not close to what they were watching before. Just, you know, the same patterns, the same structure, just with, you know, different details.
Right. Yeah, and I think it absolutely is. It's a great structure. I thought the beginning of this match really felt like the first round of like a heavyweight title fight or something, where you just got a lot of feeling each other out and they don't do a lot. They're kind of, you know, Fujiwara's throwing some jabs, you know, Super Tiger's throwing some kicks, but not really that they're not to land, just to kind of feel everybody out. And I just really liked the sort of like, all right, well, we're not going to jump right into this. We got to kind of get a sense of where everything is and where we are and where the other guy is and what he's going to do.
It's funny that you mentioned kind of round because, you know, I've seen what I'm supposed to see with Sayama when it comes to, you know, the Tiger match, Dynamite Kid stuff, just enough so that I can use the talking point of it being overrated and not be a complete ass. But most of what I've seen him in recently is Sami Lee. So I've seen him in the UK more than anything else recently. So that kind of round system and that the way that they start out feeling each other out in those, I could see that a little bit.
Yeah. It's interesting. Tiger Mask is a guy that I really liked that year and a half he was in UWF.
You know, he blew me away here, actually, relative to what I was expecting.
What's that?
I said he blew me away relative to what I was expecting.
He was great. It's just like he had a year of being great. And he was fun as a – he came back to wrestling, like, in the 2000s as, like, a big fat guy. He was fun as kind of a fat guy who was, like, doing a lot of his old spots except at half speed because he was, you know, 275 or something like that. But would, like, throw really stiff kicks because he was a big fat guy throwing kicks. So I kind of like old fat guy Sayama. He had a fun match with Fujiwara when, you know, 20-odd years after this match. I loved the first knee where it's like Fujiwara's on the mat. He's working through stuff, and Super Tiger breaks up and does that jumping knee right to his head, like a little down head. And it's like one blow. Just as a huge deal, and like it's a 9 count, it really feels like, oh man, this is awesome. Like this is a like, you know, you don't usually see a one punch or a one strike thing in wrestling mean that much.
Yeah, you know, and that early bit when he was going for the leg lock, and Sayama kept trying to get up and do strikes. It felt a lot like, and this is gonna sound weird, but it felt like Fujiwara was a base, you know, not against a flyer, but against a striker. Does that make any sense?
Sure. So he's like Fuerza Guerrera.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's gonna, okay, we're gonna slow it down a little bit with your kicks. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is an amazing like guy to make somebody look awesome. Mm-hmm. In that way, right? Like on those kicks. I mean, those kicks weren't the greatest kicks you've ever seen in wrestling. But I mean, Fujiwara, like he sold them like he was getting hit by Mike Tyson, right? He's checking his tooth. He's checking his kidneys from getting kicked in the stomach. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, like glassy eyed, spinning around. I mean, when Super Tiger hits him, he really is like, oh man, I'm out of my element here. I got to somehow survive this.
And it absolutely worked because the fans were responding huge every time that, you know, he even threw a kick.
Yeah. I think this is a great, like, the end especially was a real example of the use of distance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, whereas Fujiwara is a guy who needs to have it close. It's almost like, you know, and then whereas Sam is a guy who's going to attack from far. It's the same way you might, you know. The Fujiwara's only chance to win this was going to be grabbing an arm, grabbing a leg, doing a short headbutt. You know, so he kept backing himself up into corners to try to bring him in because he knew that if he stayed at distance, he was just going to get picked apart. It's like you see, like a boxer with a short arm. It's like, all right, you know, it's like when I used to, when I boxed in my younger days, it was like that. I was always against like guys who were 6'4". And I'm 5'11", so I always had to say, well, the only way I'm going to win this is if I stay right in somebody's chest, or else I'm just going to get jabbed until I can't, you know, until my eyes close. So it's the same sort of thing. It's like Fujiwara can't be on the outside with this guy. He's on the outside. Every time he's on the outside, he's getting, like, spun kick in the head.
I think another element of that was that whenever Sayama did throw a kick, there was always the risk that it was going to get caught and that right. Fujiwara was going to be able to close the distance. So, every time, it could have gone either way.
One of my favorite things about Fujiwara, just in his entire, after I've seen him, you know, so many matches of his, is he's a cool guy who he only sells when stuff lands. So if it doesn't land, he's not going to sell it. And, you know, it's like, you know, there's some stuff that gets whiffed here, and whereas another wrestler might, you know, sell it anyway. Fujiwara is like, no, yeah, it's got to hit me. If it doesn't hit me, I'm going to walk through it. And especially Takada is a guy who I don't think has very good looking kicks. So if you watch a Takada Fujiwara match, like 40% of them Fujiwara is not selling. So, but when he hits them, he's like, all right, that's what I need to do to make it work.
One thing I saw in the other matches more than this one, which I think might play into that, is that if it doesn't hit, does he have a facial reaction to it? You know, does he sort of say, you almost got me, but you didn't, now it's my turn?
He's got great facial reactions. Yeah. He'll sneer at a guy. Look at this jerk. he's great at it. I mean, the match we'll talk about later in Miami is pretty much all facial expressions. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a match of this entirely him smirking. He just works it with a smirk. He hardly does anything. But yeah, he's one of the great, like, yeah, nice try. Close, no cigar. You know, he's a guy who Otani's jacket is a buddy of ours that speaks Japanese, and he says that he's always like cracking jokes in the ring. you know, like shit talking, you know, like laughing at somebody when they miss something. But of course, he's awesome at, you know, laughing, ha ha ha, and then flipping the switch when he gets caught to a guy like, oh man, now I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a danger.
It's, I mean, my favorite reaction in the match, and it's kind of late in the match, so hopefully I'm not jumping ahead, is when Sayama kicks him on the ground, which is a little bit unprecedented, because I think they start with a handshake here.
Right.
And you know, towards the end of the match, Sayama kicks him, you know, not fair play, right in the ribs on the ground, and the crowd doesn't like it at all, but Fujiwara really doesn't like it. And that's when he comes back with a massive headbutt, and he's just pissed off the...
Yeah,
hell.
I also love the part where Sayama keeps trying to headbutt him back, and mm-hmm. Fujiwara just moves out of the way. And
yeah, he just keeps missing.
He keeps missing him, and he keeps hopping it. Oh, this is how you do it. And I love that finish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I love the sort of – Fujiwara is one of the best ever at, like, having a really, cool, innovative finish. Not in, like, a, you know, really choreographed way, but he's a guy that's great at a flash finish, and that was the thing where – you know, finally, Super Tiger's hitting him with things and, you know, almost knocks him out a bunch of times. And then he makes the mistake of grabbing him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as he grabs him, it's like, you know, I'm going to throw a suplex on this guy. And it's like, nope, you should have thrown kicks. Once you grabbed him, that's exactly what he was. It's like grappling with a jiu-jitsu black belt or something like that. Well, okay, you want to go to the ground? You're going to knock me out at the feet. But you go to the ground, you grab me in a waist lock, I'm going to throw that little short, sharp elbow in the arm bar, and you're done.
Yeah, no, that came so quick, it came so sudden, and it looked so good.
Yeah, this is great. It's one of my favorite professional wrestling finishes of all time. Because I love this match. I mean, mm-hmm. I think this match is like a legitimate classic. And that is like just one of my for a beautifully done, cool finish that fits with the entirety of what the story the match was telling the entire time was of Super Tiger as the guy who's going to get you from long and Fujiwara is the guy who's going to get you in close. And that was like the perfect thing where, like, you know, Sayama got to, you know, couldn't finish him completely, couldn't knock him out completely, goes to grab him and just gets cleaned.
And, you know, to be fair to Sayama, he did, you know, that last set of kicks, he set that up with a suplex.
Right.
Sure. So, you know, he was going back to the well because the kicks didn't put him away, and then it was just a mistake, and that was it.
Yeah. Cool. So you're in on that match.
I am in on that match.
All right. So now our next match is of not the same kind of match at all. Right?
No.
Completely different kind of match. This is Yoshiaki Fujiwara versus Riki Choshu from June 9th, 1987. And this match, let me check here, this match finished, where did this finish?
Five, maybe? I looked this up.
Yeah, five. I think I had it at one.
Which I could see myself having this at one on some lists.
Yeah, because it is just, now here's, this is ultimate minimalist wrestling.
It's 13 right? minutes, maybe.
13 minutes, so yeah. Perfect amount of time,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's like, that's how I, you know, I'm at the point of my age now, I don't really want to watch a wrestling match that's much longer than, like, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 20, maybe I could take 20. Once it gets to, like, when I was younger, it's like, you know, oh, Chris Hero and CM Punk are doing a 90-minute match? Awesome. Now that just sounds, that's a nightmare. the idea to watch two indie dudes go 90, or even, like, 30, I don't want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 13 minutes, perfect amount of time. I mean, these, I think, are the two of the most charismatic wrestlers ever.
I've never seen Choshu before. This is actually my first time ever seeing Choshu. Okay.
So what did you think the first time you ever saw Choshu?
Well, I mean, this match, I was pissed off at people that they didn't make me watch it years ago.
It's so good. He like so Fujiwara jumps him. I mean, it's also great. It's also, you know, this was no back and forth in this at all, right?
Yeah.
It goes, it's what Fujiwara is controlling,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, sneering and walking around, God. Puffing his chest up like an asshole, you know, busting Choshu open. He jumps him in the aisle, kicks mm-hmm. his ass, busts him open, and then Choshu hits that lariat. And then it's like Fujiwara is just trying to survive
mm-hmm.
this dude hitting him with bombs.
I mean, there's a pile driver that Fujiwara picks him up on. Yeah. You know, there's whenever Choshu tries to come back earlier in the match, Fujiwara just sneers at him. You know, he just looks at him with this disdain, like, you're going to hit me? Yeah, keep hitting me. Hit me a few more times. That's great. Sure. And then he just pounds him. He headbutts him, you know?
Yeah. And then, of course, that first clothesline turns the tail, and then just, you know, it's then Choshu. Then Choshu does, like you said, he's got like three moves, mm-hmm. but it's all of them look great. They're just brutal. And that, you know, and it's one of my favorite things about this match is, I don't know if you knew this, but there, Fujiwara has like a comedy spot that he does in a lot of his matches that aren't like big deals like this, where he will take a guy, will remove the bolt.
Mm-hmm.
Holding the turnbuckle together.
How is this a comedy spot if they're removing the bolt? Okay, all right, go on.
They take the padding off the bolt.
Yeah, that's when people get bloody. That's not a comedy spot.
They smash Fujiwara's head into it, and he laughs and smiles.
All right.
This is like a class. Fujiwara does this over and over again. If you see, he does this in almost every match. So this is a match where a big turning point is Fujiwara getting his head smashed into a ring post, which he normally no-sells as part of like a comedy spot in a regular match. So Choshu really slams his head into that ring post. It's like, well, if you're normally going to no-sell this is going to be the point where you start bleeding all over the ring. I got to really open your head up and make it work. I gotta get the juice out of this coconut. So he just absolutely smushes his head in, and then Fujiwara just starts leaking.
Mm-hmm.
All over the rig.
Yeah, I thought that all of those moments where they're big moments where Fujiwara loses the advantage or he gets hurt, you know, like that first clothesline or the deathlock, to me, I've never seen a Scorpion deathlock used like this. It was almost like my understanding, I guess, maybe Choshu uses this like this a lot, but it was sort of what made it legitimate that he got back in the match, was that he had him in the deathlock for a minute or so. You know, it wasn't to finish him, it was just to wear him down to the point where they were back on even footing.
Right. Slowed him down, he yanked his back. It was a great-looking deathlock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was like, I think when I remember when I wrote reviewed this for the New Japan site, I described this as basically being like if Hogan versus Rock at WrestleMania, if they made contact on their moves. Was how I thought of this match, right? Like, those guys actually, if their blows actually made contact, this would be what it was like. Because it was like the two most charismatic guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, having a match that's all about sort of, you know, what their charisma means.
Yeah, and also if they hated each other about 300 times more, because, I mean, it starts from the beginning and never lets up. I don't remember Rock and Hogan. I think I remember them, like, stooging, and I remember them looking out at the crowd and being in awe, but right. This starts with violence and it ends with violence, and in the middle there's violence.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great. And it's like, I also, you know, it's so nice to see a match that isn't set up with just, have 2 minutes of offense, then I've got 2 minutes of offense, and a minute of offense. I mean, there's so much of wrestling now
is
stuck in that structure, right? Where
guys
are just going to, you know, it's my turn, and then it's your turn, and then you do some things, and I'm going to do some things, and I'll do some things, and then I'll counter your thing, and then you'll counter my thing, and then then one of us will pin the other one. And this is just like, I like matches more where there's, as a shift. I mean, my favorite match of all time is Sangre Chicana versus MS1, and that's a match that...
Same opening beatdown.
Yeah, really, very similar match. This is like the Japanese wrestling version of that, right? Almost as much blood. You know, same kind of idea, same kind of structure. And it's a structure I really like. You know,
what was the backstory in this? I don't have any idea why they were killing each other.
I think this was during the period where Fujiwara comes over as part of the UWF invader force.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's there's not as much backstories in these things. He's a guy who's not part of New Japan. Ricky Choshu is part of New Japan, so they're going to try to kill each other.
Okay.
Is basically the – I mean, that's, you know, there's not a lot of – outside of weird stuff like FMW or Mikinuku Pro, there's not really a lot of layered storylines in Japanese wrestling.
Was the crowd behind Fujiwara here? That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, I think they were probably a little mixed. I would think – I think that, you know, because you had each promotion had their own set of fans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think you probably had a lot of UWF fans there. And then, you know, New Japan fans as well, Choshu fans. Choshu was always kind of an invader, too. So it was a little invader versus invader kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, my favorite spot was towards the end when Fujiwara was taking the pad off.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't do it in time, and Choshu starts to come back in. And he just bolts out of the corner after him and nails him.
Yeah.
And it was just a thing. You know, it wasn't planned. You know that there was no sense of that. That it wasn't, you know, he wasn't thinking a second before that, okay, Choshu's going to get up and I'm going to go nail, you know. Yeah. It's just he was coming in and he had it like beeline at him to buy a couple more seconds. And then he came back and tossed the pad at him.
Yeah, the tossing the pad at him was a real dick move. Fujiwara is a guy who's got a real great sense of the way a wrestling match should look to make it look, you know, again, it doesn't look like a fight, right? It doesn't look like an MMA fight, but he is a guy who knows how to sort of keep realism in a match longer than you would expect it to, kind of. Like, he's a guy who makes everything look good. He doesn't, you don't see him blow spots, or if he does, it's always part of what was going on. But he's a guy who kind of really is a master at the sort of making wrestling completely plausible in the under the rules that it's under.
Which is way better than something looking real, frankly.
Sure. I mean, you know, I'm a bigger fan of stiffness for stiffness' sake than you are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, I don't think either of those matches were tremendously stiff. Although there were some pretty big shots in the in the Super Tiger match. But these weren't battle arts, right? This isn't Yuki Ishikawa trying to look like he's shattering somebody's jaw.
Though Choshu had some mounted on, like, the second rope side elbows in this match that were amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen those. I don't know if he usually does those or not, but they were so good.
Yeah. I don't think I remember that as a Choshu spot.
Yeah.
I think people have because Fujiwara is such a tough guy. Mm-hmm. I think that I think people do tend to crack him a little harder maybe than they would normally. I mean, and those lariats were like completely just I'm running as hard as I can, throwing my arm at you, and it's going to hit you, and where it's going to hit you, who knows, and how hard it's going to hit you, I don't care.
And Fujiwara was selling by, you know, slumping over and crashing in weird directions. It wasn't just like I got hit by a clothesline sell, you know?
Right. No, he's great at that, right? He didn't do I'm going to do a backflip. It was sold like he got kind of like got clipped by a motorcycle walking across the street or something like that. Yeah. He was slumped over like, oh, what was that? What happened to me?
Yeah. So that's a great match. I love that I saw that. It ranks really high on, you know, my 80s scale.
All right. See, as long as you only watch specially curated Japanese wrestling, you'll be a big fan of it.
Yeah. You know, I thought about getting, and I still think about getting the New Japan set, and this has not convinced me not to do so. It's just I'm waiting on the Puerto Rico set now. I'm hoping that drops soon.
Yeah, the New Japan set's a lot of fun. There's a lot of really great matches on there. And, you know, this – and you all of the – you should maybe get the other Japan.
Yeah, get the other Japan. My original plan was to get both of them and kind of watch them chronologically interspersed.
Oh, yeah, that'll work.
But I don't know.
At least if you watch the UWF stuff and then the UWF versus New Japan feud.
Yeah.
Which is – it's fun. All that stuff is great. I mean, Japanese wrestling is the best when you've got – promotions fighting. I mean, the War versus New Japan feud is also one of my all-time favorite things, and, you know, just because you got the whole two fans of different promotions, you know, really, really into it, the way, you know, you might see it in like a soccer stadium in South America or something like that, where they know there's a chance people might get shot if one team loses. You get that you know, like fight sets. All right, so I made you. I was sort of mean, I think, of me, which was picking a Japanese wrestling match with a bunch of Japanese dudes on each side, hadn't seen probably many of them ever before, and made you try to figure out Tatsumi Fujinami, Kichi Yamada, Shiro Koshinaka, Kengo Kimura, and our man Yoshiaki Fujiwara versus Kuniaki Kobayashi, Super Strong Machine, Riki Choshu, and Hira and Masa Saito from September 12, 1988. This match finished number three on the New Japan set.
And I had to watch it twice because I had no idea who anyone was the first time, and I spent the whole match figuring that out.
It was a little bit of hazing, I think, for me to give you this match. I was like, ooh, what's another one I should give him? I want to give him, you know, a real shoot one, and then, oh, this match finished really high on the New Japan set.
Let me just run down the names. Kimura, I've never seen before. Yamada, I obviously know.
But probably never seen before is Yamada.
No, never is Yamada. Koshinaka, I had not seen before. Fujinami, yeah, I'd seen some of his 70s stuff trying to get into him. Yeah. Masa Saito was on my top 100 as my only Japanese person.
All right, this would be a great Masa Saito performance, right?
Yeah, he actually could have ended up higher. Let's see, Hiro Saito, I've not seen. Choshu.
At least he's easy to figure out, right? He's the guy that's not Masa Saito.
Yes.
Kind of like Masa Saito.
I figured him out pretty quick. And I don't think I had seen Super Strong Machine. I had not seen Kobayashi. So, yeah, these are all new guys to me for the most part. I mean, I've obviously heard about them. I've read about, you know, a chunk of them. I knew Koshinaka had a butt attack, you know, but I had no idea who was who even coming in. And even into the second time, I had problems with Kimura and Fujinami until I figured out the shin pad with the lightning.
Yeah, Kimura's also got the taped vests. Yeah,
apparently they all look alike to me or something. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, so there's a lot of black trunks, too.
Yeah.
You know, Super Strong Machine's got a mask, at least. So you can kind of tell that. All right, what was your thoughts about this match?
This was great. It was a lot to unpack. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens in it, up and down, but I like this a lot, too, and I thought they did a great job of protecting guys here. I thought I'd be pissed off about the ring-out stuff, but they used it really well.
The ring-out stuff is, I mean, all of these sort of, there's not that many, there's like three or four of these multiple-man elimination matches, and all of them really use the ring-out really, really well. Like, that's a thing where they've clearly thought about cool ways to do this spot and work around it. Do you want to talk a little bit about your thoughts about every guy? Should you do it like that?
Let's
take the sort of the Saito Choshu team first.
Okay.
Who was the guy that impressed you the most in that? I'm assuming it's Masa Saito.
Yeah, it's Masa Saito. I mean, his performance in the back half is amazing, but I liked him throughout. I thought he brought a lot of American trickery, you know, in there at times. A little Memphis kind of going with the sort of cheap shots and things like that other people weren't doing. The back half of the match, you know, the last quarter, really, where he is fighting for his life. You know, I'm not sure I've ever seen exactly that element to him before, and it was really cool. So, yeah, I think he was the only guy that could have made that BS finish work out of the people in there because of sort of that American in him.
Right. The finish was Fujinami jumping at him and kind of flying out of the ring.
Yeah, but before that, the ref bump and all that, you know, which I wasn't expecting that kind of a finish.
Yeah.
But they made it work. I mean, it was earned.
Yeah, and that was also a match. You know, it's not blood very much in wrestling anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a match that's really helped by the fact that Masa Saito looks like somebody stabbed him in the forehead with a screwdriver.
Yeah, I mean, there's a moment towards the end where Saito almost does a ring out, and then after that he does a suplex attempt to the outside. And that's the one ring out kind of threat in the entire match where the fans don't go nuts for it. And I think because at that point they would have seen it as a mercy.
Right.
You know, I think they were just, okay, he's going to just leave with dignity and stop bleeding all over the place.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, it's the structure of it's kind of strange because those guys seem like they're kind of working heel.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the match, and then, of course, he's you know, left in this real sympathetic situation that he's bleeding so much. And isn't, if I remember correctly, isn't even Fujinami down 2-1 before he?
He is.
Yeah. It's a little bit of structure. It's like, he's down 2-1. He's the guy who's got to fight back. And fights back so bad that he almost murders Masa Saito in the middle of the ring.
Yep. So he definitely, that's a great performance. It actually felt like I was really justified in putting him on my list, even though that was sort of me being a dick.
Well, you had business seen some AWA, right?
Yeah, I had the AWA, I had some WWF, I had seen that one match with Zabisco, you know?
Yeah, there you go. He's a fine guy to be a solo Japanese representative on a set. Either him or Tajiri. If you didn't put Tajiri on, you could put Tajiri on.
Yeah, he was one of my last knockoffs. Okay. And that's only because I wanted one Japanese guy only.
Anybody else on that team make an impression on you?
I liked the way Kobayashi was paired up against the other juniors on the other side.
Yeah,
against Yamada and Koshinaka. That, you know, they had some real sense of, I think, story, or, you know, some balance there. I thought. I thought Super Strong Machine actually portrayed strength well. If that makes sense, he like seems strong.
He did seem strong. That's a good point.
He did.
I really liked his Fujiwara section.
Yeah.
That was super cool. I love that Fujiwara, like, sort of leg scissors counter thing that he does.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah. And, you know, not to skip to the other side, but Fujiwara here really almost came off like an enforcer to me. You know, if someone's going to get beat and head towards their side of the ring, he was the one that was going to come back in and kind of give bloody vengeance a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of that, because with 10 guys, you know, they took up a lot of real estate on the outside. So past that initial beating on Yamada, which was really helpful to me because it let me – I'm going to call him the heel side, but it let me learn the heel side a little bit because all of them got turns beating on Yamada.
Yeah.
But past that, there wasn't a lot of, you know, face in peril or anything like that. Everyone could get tags pretty easily just because of the size of the ring and the, you know, how many people were out there.
Yeah, Yamada's great in this guy. He is built like just a brick shit house.
I mean, this is a star. I mean, he had to be a star after this, right? I mean, yeah. It was such a great performance. He took a ton of beating and then he came back so fiery.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you watch this and you almost think, man, I almost wish he didn't put the mask on.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so Yamada, for the people who don't know that, is Jushin Liger. And he ended up obviously becoming Jushin Liger after this. It's amazing. Obviously, Jushin Liger is amazing. And I don't know whether if you get invested in some Japanese wrestling, you'll see that. But he is a guy with a lot of great sort of, you know, facial expressions and sort of fiery baby face Ricky Morton-ish stuff that is hidden a little by a mask. Although he's a great emoter with a mask too. But he looks like he's kind of a Dynamite Kid. He's built kind of looks more like a junior Dynamite Kid here than he does with Liger. And he kind of reminds me of the best of Benoit in this match. Benoit's a guy that I can't watch anymore, but, you know, this was the kind of thing he did really well, and Yamada does even better here.
And he was protected on the finish too. He got sort of rolled up out of nowhere, and yeah, I thought that he really looked good throughout. Koshinaka I didn't like as much. I mean, for one thing, he no-sold a spike pile driver. For the most part, and that pissed me off.
You do that a lot. That's a weird Japanese thing. Like, that's a move that doesn't mean as much as it should for whatever reason. Koshinaka, he's a guy who kind of later, I kind of liked him a little later. Didn't really like him at all on the 80 set. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a lot of the Koshinaka Jr. stuff is stuff that had historically been rated really high by people. And when we watch it for the set, we're like, man, all this sucks. Like, it's like some of it still made the set. But if you watch, it's like all really voted low on the bottom. And it was like all of these like Koshinaka matches that we felt like we had to put on because Meltzer gave them, you know, like huge ratings when he reviewed them forever. So it's like, well, we can't. That's just not put on at all, right? But like, you know, they're just all at the bottom. All the mid-80s juniors. Like late 80s juniors, Takata, the Cobra, all that stuff. It's just like, all this stuff stinks.
I was feeling Yamada and I was feeling Kobayashi for a bit too. He had some good, you know, exhaustion selling right before he was out. But yeah, I was not really feeling Koshinaka.
Great, 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 great food. I really like Kangol. Let's go talk a little about Kangol Kumara. He's a guy he's a guy who had a weird career, that he had like all these moments of greatness and then lots and lots of nothing. Like, he's a real greatest hits wrestler, Kumara. He had a bunch of really great hits.
You know, past confusing him for Fujinami for a lot of the match, the only thing that really stood out to me was his elimination where he kind of ran across the ring and flew out.
Yeah, I like his uppercuts. Really good looking uppercuts. The taped fist really felt like he could have had an awesome like taped fist match with Killer Karl Cox or something like that. If that feels like, I'm hoping that shows up on NWA Classics. Like your lost Kangol Kumara.
He's got these little jabs that are good too. Yeah, I did like those. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, and then great Fujinami performance.
Oh yeah, he's like a massive bully. You know, he's like the spoiler for the other side.
Yeah, and going from a guy who's fighting a 2-on-1 advantage to as like this sort of hero to a guy who's just now gonna turn it all around and just be a vicious killer. Mm-hmm. It's a great it's a great performance where he does a bunch of different great wrestling things in one match. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you know, people
I can see that.
This guy's a great wrestler because he can work babyface and work heel. And it's like Fujinami's like, I can do that all in a half an hour. I'll play these 8 roles and they'll all be awesome. Mm-hmm. And it'll all be within this one span.
At the same time, he doesn't dominate the match or anything. You know, everyone gets a lot of time, and he's in there now and again in that first half, but, you know, he lets everyone else get their spots in.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm wondering if there's these two classic elimination matches that finished back-to-back 3 and 4 on the set. Mm-hmm. And I thought I liked the one from 86 a little better. And I kind of want to rewatch that one after watching this again and sort of see, well, okay, how do they land against each other?
Yeah, and, you know, I always kind of wanted to see these, but I heard about them because, you know, I followed things when the set was coming out. But at the same time, I would have never just jumped into a match. Why would I ever jump into a match with 10 guys I don't know? Well, you know, what would possess me to do something that stupid?
Yeah, it's your boy.
Here I did it. I mean, normally I'd go out, like, I'd watch 15 matches from each of these guys and get a good sense of it, and then I'd watch a classic match.
Yeah.
But I was cajoled into it. I'm glad it took a little effort, but I probably would have never watched this otherwise.
Yeah, exactly, because you're not going to watch the 50 match. You got kids.
Yeah. So I have these grand plans. They never quite work out.
Yeah. All right, so this last match is a little bit of a bizarre one. But what a match I really enjoy.
I wasn't feeling this one as much.
You weren't feeling this one as much?
This is the one I didn't like as much.
This is, so I will talk a little about it. I'll talk about why I like it.
And there's one thing I really like, and we'll see if it's the same thing. But
it's Yoshiyuki Fujiwara versus Bart Vail. Mm-hmm. It's from Miami. Off of PWFG commercial tape is where I saw it first. But it's this weird thing where apparently Bart Vail had a shoot fighting promotion in Miami. And there's no evidence of this existing.
Who's Bart Vail? I have no idea who this guy is.
He's like a guy who's like a kickboxing dude. He fought in some early MMA fights. He was on PWFG shows a lot. I don't know. I imagine he's a guy who owned a Taekwondo studio in Miami. You know what he look like? Does he kind of look like a Kenny Power, like a Kenny Powers-ish kind of guy?
He's someone that should be like getting shot in the groin by Keith Hayward in an early UFC or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what he is, right? But he is kind of like this. You can tell he's like a guy with like a great mullet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably a black belt and a bunch of martial arts, but questionable black belt. Who spends most of his time like teaching like 12-year-olds front kicks, and then every once in a while goes over to Japan to wrestle and shoot fights against Yoshiyuki Fujiwara. But also like hugely over in Miami for whatever reason.
There should have been like Gloria Estefan playing in the background or something.
It's such like a, what was the undercard of this show, right? Like, what is this? Is this a thing that he ran a bunch? Is he a guy? Is he a guy who ran like a, is this a regional fed I've never heard of?
Well, wasn't it for some sort of championship or something?
Yeah, I think it was for the PWFG title.
Okay.
Because I think I don't remember Bart Vail, so he's not he's got the American flag trunks, and I mean, so it's not a good, I think it's a great match, but I mean, it's not a good match. Fujiwara doesn't really do very much, But he's a guy who is really great. I mean, I think he's basically – this is basically what Fujiwara would have been if he was Professor Fujiwara, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, like, you know, coming in to fight Pedro Morales in 1977 in right? I mean, this is Fujiwara's audition to work as a Toji Yamamoto tag team. Yeah. He's great. He's great at it. He's so good as like an evil. Like, I just wanted to throw salt in Bart Vail's eyes.
Yeah, it starts right at the beginning with the shove, and then after he shoves him, and the crowd really doesn't like that, he goes for a handshake attempt, and like no one knows how to deal with that because he's just screwing with him.
Yeah, it's such a thing. I love the part where Bart Vail headbutts him on the ground. And he starts pointing at his head. You know, what's that about? Those aren't the rules.
The best thing in this match, the one thing I really loved, was Vail would be doing these really broad attacks, you know, kind of almost for the last row, and then he'd fall down, and you have no idea how he fell down, but Fujiwara had snuck in there close, and he'd done something that the crowd could get no enjoyment out of. Like, there was no way, there was nothing to pop at. He did something, and no one knows what, because he was in there. So it was almost like these big sweeping babyface things and these inner quiet heel attacks.
Yeah. No, that's great. You took the crowd shots. They were just going insane for Bart Vail. Like, this part of this is just like, what world is this? Why is this not? Why it's 2016? Why don't I have every single Miami Bart Vail show on there? Bart Vail's not a great wrestler. He actually got to be okay. Like he later, the very end of his run in PWFG, I kind of liked it.
He feels to me like he should be teaming with like his brother Brett Vail or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or he really does look like a Kenny McBride character. That fucking mustache and that mullet of USA flag trunks. And I think he was a guy who fought early MMA. I don't think he ever fought in the UFC, but like, you know, whatever the IFC early cage fights were, and probably had a, you know, losing record.
Or like Portland couldn't get Dan Severn to come in for the Tonya Harding show, so they bring him in instead. It'd be that kind of thing.
I love the fact that also, you know, you have the whole thing where Fujiwara complains about the headbutt, and then near the end of the match, like, cheap shot headbutts Bart Vail on the ropes during the break, and it kind of struts away with like a fucking smile on his face. What a piece of shit Fujiwara is in this match. Am I selling? I know it's not a great match.
And this is supposed to be teacher versus student, isn't it?
I mean,
that's what the. So, I don't know.
I mean, when like Bart Vail gets to knock out like all these fucking Miami dirtbags and their cut off shirts, waving their hands in the air, like when he gets the knockout win, like people are so psyched.
And, you know, Vail's doing some of the stuff he does. He has, like, this big jumping spin kick that almost takes off Fujiwara's head. I don't know how he dodged it, but he's doing this ridiculous offense.
Yeah.
And they're going nuts for it.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
No.
It doesn't really land that well.
And it's got, like, two twists that it doesn't need, you know? He leaves himself open three times to do something he could have done way easier just by kicking.
Yeah. You know, he's, like, he's got the back of whatever, like, you know, Luke is playing, and Two Live Crew is playing the next night. And then, you know, he's got to get this crowd hyped up for that.
Fujiwara had a great belly-to-belly, though.
Yeah,
I see that.
Yeah,
and it didn't really mean anything in the match, but
yeah, the belly to belly. He didn't, you know. Yeah, it was a really nice belly to belly. Kind of really got his hips into it.
That I think is the suplexes in these matches are kind of the realest looking thing because they don't look, you know, nice and neat. They're not like a Iron Sheik gut wrench or something, you know.
When Fujiwara gets suplexed by Choshu in their match, and he gets this like kind of like oh shit look on his face in the middle of the way on the way up, it's just great. Where he's like, oh no, damn it! I thought I had this fucking dude. I'm going for a ride.
And they have these things that start like a belly to back, and they end up like a German. You know, they're just trying to get the guy over. It's like a gut wrench that ends up like a German somehow, and you're wondering what the hell happened.
So.
Oh, yeah. And no, but why I really didn't like this match, I think, is because it seemed almost. I like the distinction in the Sayama match more, where it was sort of one guy who was doing one thing and one guy who was doing something very different. This was more sort of even, and it didn't jump out at me in the same way. I'm sure that if I watched a bunch of these matches and picked up on the nuance a little more, it probably would have helped. But the other one was just more accessible to me.
Yeah, and I don't think this was. I think this match is more about the just WTF of it rather than the this is a great wrestling match. I mean, this is a match I enjoy just because it's got so much heat and it's so weird. And Fujiwara is doing something really channeling Toru Tanaka or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it really makes me want to see, like, Fujiwara versus Dusty or Fujiwara versus Lawler.
Yeah,
or Fujiwara versus Hogan.
Against someone who's actually likable, because even though this crowd liked Vale, he was a complete douchebag.
Yeah, he's a complete, utter dipshit. You know, do you remember Jerry Flynn?
Yeah.
He was a guy who was working PWFG around this time. Mm-hmm. So there's a pretty good Jerry Flynn-Bart Vale match. There's a fun Jerry Flynn versus Fujiwara match.
He could be Brett Vale.
What?
I said he could be the Brett Vale.
He could be the Brett Vale. Yeah, totally. Exactly. Yeah, so Jez is like, this is where, if you ever wonder where Jerry Flynn came from, I'm sure he's on the undercard of this this show against somebody.
So why didn't Bishop ever sign this guy?
I don't know. I guess he does seem like a perfect.
He could have been part of Blood Runs Cold.
Yeah, totally. I guess he does. I guess maybe he ran a maybe Ernest Miller ran a competing dojo. And that was what was going on.
Yeah, Ernest Miller probably had more world karate championships or something.
Exactly. You know, there was another guy who, bizarre dude who worked in, do you know what I think about boxing?
No, I know very little about boxing.
Okay, so Andre Berto was Mayweather's last opponent.
Okay.
And was a guy who had some, maybe held it. There's a lot of titles in boxing. Might have held a title at one point. And his dad was a guy who fought in a UFC once and is a guy who's all over the PWFG shows. Do you sell Berto? It's like a Haitian dude whose son went on to fight Floyd Mayweather Jr. That's another guy who's clearly working the undercard as a secondary Pedro Morales babyface for the Haitians of Miami and whatever this Miami Shoot fighting fed is. he's clearly against maybe Fidel Sierra on the undercard or whatever, like a Haitian versus Cuban thing.
I'd like to see Fidel Sierra in this setting, actually.
Yeah, I bet he'd be great.
He probably would be.
The joke is, the funny thing was Dutch Mantel was on the first UWF show as Maeda's opponent. But that was when the first UWF show, they weren't really doing this style.
Mm-hmm.
That was just like a wrestling match. It was kind of an okay wrestling match, not that good. But, it is always fun when you see like American pro wrestlers coming in and working like a shoot style. Like Backlund's got a couple matches in UWFI against Takata. Vader, of course, had a big run in there.
Mm-hmm.
At John Tenta.
Yeah.
And some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Greg Valentine worked a battle arts match when he's kind of old. It's a lot of fun. It's Glenn Jacobs worked PWFG. Yeah, he has a match against Daisuke Kade and he's got a match against Yuki Ishikawa, where both battle arts guys who started out in PWFG. Not good. He's not good at it. It's not good matches at all. But
just keep spamming the uppercut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this would have been a green. This isn't the Glenn Jacobs who had established all of that ring polish that Bix is always talking about. Like, this and turned into the great worker. All right. Okay. Great. Yeah. So you're in.
I'm in, yeah. I want to go get those Japan sets now. I'm not sure when I'm actually going to do it, but I will.
Yeah, Will's got the PW. If you want to go a whole hog, I'm pretty sure he's also actually made a best of PWFG set with him.
The best of Bart Vale.
There's a fair amount of Bart Vale on there, yeah. If you're like, I got to see more Bart Vale. But PWFG is a really fun promotion because it is like a lot of Fujiwara versus just completely rando dudes who had no business being a wrestling match. So it's kind of fun to watch him like work this Malaysian kickboxer and have it be like kind of a fun match.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is the part of the show where we dig in the crates for something that is not related to professional wrestling. So I don't know if you've listened to the show before, Matt?
Yeah, I've listened to the show. Who knows if I ever made it to the end of a show, but I've definitely listened to the show.
Okay, all right. So the end of the show is when we dig in the crates for something that is not a professional wrestling match. Do you have something, or do you want me to go first, and then you can think about it for a little bit?
You go first, and I'll pretend that I've thought of something.
Okay. So I'm going to pick a movie, which I actually was on a little sort of baby moon with my wife and New York, and we saw this at the Angelica, which is like a sort of a famous movie theater in the West Village, and it's called Love and Friendship, and it is a Jane Austen adaptation, so there's nothing that says the audience of a professional wrestling podcast more than pimping a Jane Austen adaptation,
mm-hmm.
But it is by Whit Stillman. I don't know if you're – are you familiar with Whit Stillman, the director?
No, not.
Yeah, so he's a guy who did three really great movies in the 90s, Metropolitan, Barcelona, and Last Days of Disco.
Okay, I've seen Last Days of Disco.
So, okay. So he did Last – and then he didn't do anything for a really, really long time. And then he's kind of come back recently, had a movie, which I haven't seen yet before this. And had an Amazon pilot, which didn't get picked up. And then this movie is his first movie that's not set in, like, modern days. But he's a very, very funny writer. And he does this very specific thing about, like, observing, you know, social mores, which is also a big Jane Austen thing. And this has got your Last Days of Disco reunion. So Kate Beckinsale is the lead and Chloe Sevigny is her like sidekick, and it is hysterically funny. Like, I cannot remember laughing out loud as hard at a movie in I don't know how long. And there's this guy played by this actor Tom Bennett, didn't have much film experience, and he plays this like lord who's just like a dipshit, and every moment he's on the screen, like, I almost pee my pants, I was laughing so hard at this goof. And it's just really cleverly written, really well acted, and really sort of charming and pleasant to watch. And I could not recommend, and it's not something I'm a big Whit Stillman fan, and I was excited for it for that way, but I'm not like a guy who necessarily likes costume dramas. And I thought it was just awesome. So this is like I think it's a real crates thing, especially for the kind of people who would listen to professional wrestling podcasts, but it's in theaters now. I'm sure it will show up. It's an Amazon Pictures movie, so I imagine it will end up on Amazon Prime pretty quickly. But it's great.
Yeah, I was looking at that too, because we were trying to find something to watch, but it wasn't playing close enough to us. Because it's got, I guess, a limited release or something.
I'm sure it's got to be playing in some DC. It's got to be playing somewhere in DC.
Yeah, right? But we're relatively limited because it would have been the case of the 14-year-old watching the 4-year-old and one of those deals. But I am looking forward to it because I did read some good things about it, actually.
It's a good if you want to score some points with your wife.
I think it's got like a 99 or 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
99 on Rotten Tomatoes right now. If you want to score some points with your wife, this is like a good thing, right?
It's like, I could probably use some.
Suggest that you go see this Jane Austen movie. That's your idea. And then she's like, oh, wow, it's so nice, you know.
She'd just be glad.
I was like, we should see this Jane Austen movie, honey.
Yeah, there's not even any zombies in it.
No zombies at all. Just they cut with words.
Mm-hmm.
They don't cut with swords.
All right, I got something. And I just finished one of these because I read one a year. And this is George MacDonald Fraser's Flashman novels. And the gimmick behind them, I think it's something that certain people who like heels and actually are literally, you know, are literate enough to read would like these. They're historical fiction. They're based on a character from a 1857 novel called Tom Brown's School Days, and he was sort of the bully at school. And what Fraser did is he then extended his life throughout the whole Victorian period and interspersed them in almost every important historical event. But the gimmick is that he's a complete inversion of the Victorian ideal. He's a coward, he's a rogue, he's a scoundrel. It's all from his point of view. It's his found memoirs. And there's about 10 of them, and they're hilarious. Because, A, you learn a lot of history, but it's also the case that, you know, he's just does the completely off-type thing in every situation, in sort of the worst, most heelish, most chicken shit heel thing imaginable. And you can kind of pick up that wrestlerly heel mannerisms that we love so much in all of, you know, your Rip Rogers and all of your Buddy Roses and, you know, all of those cads. And you definitely come out learning a lot if you don't know about, you know, the 19th century, and even if you do. And the one I just read was him going to the West. It was Flashman and the Redskins, which is set in 49-50 and 75-76. And, you know, him kind of on the road with the gold rush, you know, traveling across D.C. or from D.C. Later on, you know, with Custer for the second half. So they're a lot of fun. They're really good. They made one movie with Malcolm McDowell, which is just okay, back in the 70s. But the books, I read one a year because the guy's dead, no more coming. I still have three or four more left to go, and I'll be sad when I'm all done with them because they're really good.
Cool. I'm in. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now. I'm a guy who likes I read a lot. So
yeah, so they're good romps, you know, but right. Also a lot of historical detail.
So very Victorian themed. A Victorian themed extra digging in the crates finish here. I like it.
So Fujiwara and the Victorian theme.
Fujiwara and the Victorian era.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Matt, it was good. I don't think this is the first time we've ever actually talked.
Yeah, no.
You know, though we've sort of exchanged emails and things like that over the years. I really enjoyed this. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for, you know, letting me bump around and learn about Lucha on Segunda Caeta, which was a reputational risk for you guys.
Yeah, you know. We try to get one thing out a day. It's nice to have somebody that we can guarantee put some stuff out. Yeah. We've been struggling a little bit since you stopped writing.
Yeah, I'll be back soon. You know, I hit 300 or something. I hit, you know, three a week for 2 years straight. I need a little bit of a break, but I'll be back soon. I think I might do. I'll put this out now. I think I might take all the Jim Duggan matches on Classics because he had a really big peak in Houston, and I might take a look at all those.
Oh, I like it. I'm in.
Maybe chronologically, we'll see.
Chronological Jim Duggan.
Yeah, in Houston. I want to go past Houston.
You're not going to go past Houston. You're not going to dip into Mid-South.
Yeah. I might. I think. I don't know. For now, I just want to keep pumping the classic service. You know.
Yeah, some good stuff. You liked the. I haven't watched spoilers.
Yeah, I liked the spoiler match. The spoiler looked like $1 million in that match.
Oh, I'm excited. That might be something I'm going to watch before I go to sleep tonight or tomorrow. Yep. All right. Well, Matt, it was good talking to you, buddy. And thanks for everyone for listening to the show. I'm going to be out of the country for a week and a half or so, starting next week. But I'm going to try to line one up when I get back. So keep subscribing to the feed, everyone. I'm going to be doing these semi-regularly for a little while until I stop doing them semi-regularly.